Good evening. Thanks for having me. First of all, I want to apologize. Is the mic on? I want to apologize for interrupting the night seder. Something like this should have been in some lecture hall where you'd have the option of staying in the Beis Medrash, and I'm sure many of you would prefer. And knowing myself, I would prefer that too. But I understand there's no other place available, so here I am, and I thank you for your forbearance. There's a story in the beginning of Malachim Beis. Eliyahu HaNavi, the time had come for Eliyahu to be taken up to Shemayim, and he's being escorted by Elisha, his Talmud, and it's across the Yarden, and on the other side of the Yarden, and over Yarden, he'll be taken up from this world. And as he goes eastward across Eretz Yisrael, he's greeted by B'nai HaNeviim in several places. His Talmidim, the disciples of the Neviim in training, you might say. And the last stop, Yericho, the B'nai HaNeviim say to Elisha, "Do you know that Eliyahu will be taken away from you? He's going to be brought up to heaven." He says, yeah, he knows. Elisha knows. And that happens. They cross the Yarden. There's the le'Be'esh Hashem, le'Beruach Hashem, the familiar pasuk, Kod Momadaka. And Eliyahu disappears. Eliyahu is gone. Elisha comes back. And when he comes back, he comes to Yericho again. And the B'nai HaNeviim say, "Well, where is Eliyahu? First time around, you went with Eliyahu. Where is he? What happened to Eliyahu?" And Elisha says, "No more Eliyahu. Eliyahu went up to, he was elevated. He's in heaven. Now we're going to look for him. Look for him. Why are you looking for him?" And they insisted, and the pasuk says, "Well, Yiftzerubai," they insisted, "Look, go, look for him." And you have about 50 B'nai HaNeviim crossing the Yarden, and the pasuk says they spent 3 days looking for Eliyahu, and they don't find him. And they come back. Now the question is obvious. These were the same B'nai HaNeviim who told Elisha that Eliyahu is going to be taken away from this world. So they knew. And what happened now? What happened? Where is he? You know where he is. You told me where he was going. And they're going to look for him. They're searching for 3 days. Why are you searching? The Mefarshim speak about it. The Radak speaks about it. Achrayim speak about it more at greater length. These were B'nai HaNeviim. They were Talmidim of Neviim. Whatever they had, whatever they were, they got from Eliyahu. It was his hashpah. It was his teaching. It was his influence. Whatever they were, derived from him. And now he was gone. And their source of knowledge, their source of inspiration, their source of nevuah was gone. So they failed to realize what they had known before. What they had known before was Ruach HaKodesh. Maybe it was a lower level of nevuah. Maybe it was only Ruach HaKodesh. But whatever it was a gift that came to them through the agency of Eliyahu. Once Eliyahu is gone, the gift is gone. And so they didn't know anymore. They didn't know. The Ruach HaNevuah, the Ruach HaKodesh, was taken from them. I think there's a message here for everyone. Klal Yisrael has roots. B'nai Torah have roots. We all have roots. And we derive our inspiration from our roots. It could be parents and grandparents. It could be Rosh HaYeshiva. It could be the very fact that Baruch Hashem, you have a huge olam here, which has the schus to be domiciled in a Beis Medrash. The Beis Medrash is the home. And that's where the Hashpoah comes from. And if you think about it, every single one of us knows people who have been in a yeshiva, have been in a Beis Medrash, were successful in a yeshiva, and left, and no longer were subject to the influence of Roshei HaYeshiva, Rebbeim, Mechaber HaYosei Mehem, Mitalmid HaYosei Mikulam, younger Bachrim, who forced them to exert themselves and to hone their skills in learning and in Yerushalayim. They're taken away from it, they're gone, they're exposed to different influences, and they are gone! What happened? What happened? Same thing that happened to the B'nai HaNevi'im in Yericho. They knew where Eliyahu was going, and they knew where he was going because they had grown up under the influence of Eliyahu. Take away the influence and they don't have it anymore. What are our roots? The Ramban asks the kasha in Chumash, the beginning of Lech Lecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu, Lech Lecha mi'aretzecha mi'moladetecha mi'beisavicha la'aretz asher arecha ve'ascha l'goy gadol. Who is this Avraham? Who is he? How did he have the schus? How did he earn the schus for these gifts? Ve'ascha l'goy gadol v'avarechecha v'agad l'shemecha. Who is he? What is he? In Parsha Noach, the Torah tells us, the Ramban's kasha. In Parsha Noach, the Torah tells us clearly, Noach ish tzaddik tamim hoya b'dayreisov. Noach was a tzaddik. He was a tzaddik tamim. He was a tzaddik tamim b'dayreisov in a perverse generation surrounded by corruption, moral corruption, physical corruption, where people would steal small quantities of money so that they could not be taken to judgment. And he remained ish tzaddik tamim in such surroundings. So now we know. Now we understand. Why was Noach able to survive the Mabul? Why was he saved? Why did God perform miracles for him? Why was he able to save his family? We know. Ish tzaddik tamim hoya b'dayreisov. But what about Avraham Avinu, the Ramban asks? We know that Avraham Avinu is Avraham Avinu. But why doesn't the Torah tell us? Why doesn't the Torah explain to us why Avram was chosen? The Ramban remains with the kasha. The Maral in Esach Yisrael, Perik Yud Aleph, answers this way. Had the Torah told us that Avram Avinu was chosen because he was a tzaddik tamim, because he was greater than Noach, had the Torah told us that, then this would imply, well, what about us? What about me? I don't know about you, but what about me? I'm not an ish tzaddik tamim. Avram is chosen because he earned the choice. And if somebody does not earn the choice, if somebody doesn't deserve it, then he's no longer a member of the chosen people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Avram for a reason. Look, Noach is chosen, right? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Asara doyres mi Noach v'yad Avram. And they had the opportunity to be all of them to be chosen, and they all lost. They all flubbed the chance. So the fact that you were chosen because you deserve to be chosen doesn't prove that you'll remain deserving, that your children, your grandchildren, that 10 generations later will remain deserving. So the Maral says, the Torah does not tell us that Avram was chosen because he was Avram. No. Avram was chosen because he would be the forefather of Klal Yisrael. The choice was not a specific choice. The choice was a general choice. Avram was chosen because of us. Because of me and you. Because of Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was chosen because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Chochmosa HaElyona, decided that Klal Yisrael would be his Am HaNivchor. And Avraham Avinu was as the forefather, the ancestor of Klal Yisrael, was chosen. Not because he was Avraham, but because he would be the forefather of Klal Yisrael. I'll tell you what this means. It means that all of us, every member of Klal Yisrael, is in a sense a microcosm of the Avraham Avinu who was chosen because he's part of Klal Yisrael. The Shabbos, the Kriyas HaTorah before Rosh Hashanah every year, Atem Nitzavim Hayam Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Alekeichem. There's Kulchem, everybody, all of Moshe Rabbeinu gathered all of Klal Yisrael on the last day of his life. Roshechem, Shivtechem, Ziknechem, Shetrechem, Kol Ish Yisrael, Tabchem, Nishaychem, Gerecha. So there are two elements here. There's the Klal, Atem Nitzavim Hayam Kulchem, it's the Uma Shleima, it's Klal Yisrael, and it's every individual member of Klal Yisrael. And the judgment of Rosh Hashanah is a dual judgment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges the nation as a nation, as an Uma Shleima, as Klal Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges each individual. And that means that each individual is part of the Klal. We're judged as a Klal, we're judged as a Prat. Which means that every single member of Klal Yisrael has to have responsibility for what? Well, Atem Nitzavim Yom Kulchem Lefnei Hashem Alekeichem, Rosheichem, the leaders can influence a whole nation, a community. Simple people can influence their family, their friends, their neighbors, can influence the guy in the street by walking in the street with a smile and saying good morning. You know, Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky, the last, it's been about 25 years of his life, lived in Muncie, and he lived about two blocks away from a monastery, from a nunnery. And Rabbi Yankov, for his health, used to walk every day. And when he walked in the street and he passed the nuns, he said good morning to the nuns. I don't think these nuns had ever had an Orthodox Jew saying good morning to them. But Yankov Kamenetsky said good morning to the nuns. And you know, you never know. We hear these stories about from the Crusades or later on in Jewish history that some great person, one of the Balei Tosfos, saved the life of a French nobleman. And later on, this Frenchman had the opportunity to stop a pogrom, and he did it because of this Jew who once helped him. And there are many, stories from the Middle Ages. We don't know how accurate they are, but they're documented stories even during the Holocaust. Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky told me himself, when he became Rav in Sitivyan was a little town which when he became Rav had 60 Jewish families. The poverty was such that little by little people moved away. In 1938, his last year there were 30 Jewish families left. And he said when he first came, he went to the post office to send a letter, for whatever reason, he was in the post office, and the postmaster, a Lithuanian guy, the postmaster gave him too much change. And he counted the change, and he gave back what was extra. And the postmaster smiled, and Rabbi Yankov was positive from the way that he smiled that he was testing the new rabbin. Is the new rabbin a crook? Is he one of these Jews who are always looking for an angle, or is he an honest man? And Rabbi Yankov passed the test. And he heard from people, survivors, that this postmaster actually helped Jews during the war to stay alive. And he always felt, who knows, maybe that was at least a contributory factor. We're judged as a Klal, we're judged as a Prat. Klal Yisrael as an Uma Shleima is judged. Every member of Klal Yisrael, every individual member of Klal Yisrael has to have his share in carrying out the mission of our people. During the 1967 war, the Meir Yeshiva building in Yerushalayim was right on the border of no man's land between Israel and Jordanian-occupied Jerusalem. And there were artillery bombardments going on during the first few days of the war. And during the first few days of the war, it was not at all clear that Israel would win. I remember actually being terrified. Who knows what's going to happen? The Egyptian radio and TV were reporting that hundreds of Israeli planes were destroyed on the ground. It wasn't true. They were reporting that Tel Aviv was bombed. And that wasn't true. It took a few days before we found out what was really happening. Jordanian artillery was bombarding the Jewish part of Yerushalayim. And the Meir Yeshiva had a bomb shelter in the basement, and it was packed. The Yeshiva community, neighbors, everybody came, everybody in that immediate vicinity came to the Meir Yeshiva building, and they were in the basement there. An artillery shell landed on the roof, tore through the roof of the building, landed on an upper story, and did not explode. There was a tremendous thud, and the people in the basement were terrified. And Reb Chaim Shmulevitz used to say in Shmuelson, my nephew told me that he heard it from him more than once, he would say, What saved the Meir Yeshiva? Hundreds of Bnei Torah, they were there, they were saying Tillim, they were davening, people must have been fasting. He says, no, that's not what saved the Meir Yeshiva. There was one woman there in the basement, in that bomb shelter, an aguna. Her husband had deserted her many years before. Disappeared. Left her a young mother with several young children. And she was the sole means of support. And she supported herself and her children by taking in laundry. And no washing machine. Taking in laundry back then in the 50s and the early 60s meant kneeling in front of you at your bathtub and wringing out washing clothes in the bathtub. And Reb Chaim would tell the story of this woman and he would groan, "Ay, what this poor woman went through because of a husband who was so cruel, who was so uncaring." And when that artillery shell landed, she screamed out, "Ribbono shel Olam, amichol him for everything that he did to me, save us." And Reb Chaim said, if there was anybody in the world who had a right not to be michol, she was the one. She says, "Amichol him." She said, that saved the Meir Yeshiva. That's the way a man of great sensitivity would look at events. The myth of Eliyahu, Reb Eliyahu Eliezer Dessler, speaks about the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Who needs the second day of Rosh Hashanah? It almost never happened in the time of the Sanhedrin that there were 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. It says, Mela, other Yom Tovim, Chazal gave the second day, Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golias, they gave it Kedushas Yom Tov, all right. But on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, we're saying, Hina Yom HaDin. Yom HaLefanat HaBadin. We're saying that this is a Yom HaDin, but it's not a Yom HaDin. We could talk about Kedushas Yom Tov, we could talk about Mitzvah Rabbanan up to Kiyat Shofar. How can we say that this is the Yom HaDin? How can we say that Sifrei Meisim and Sifrei Chaim Suchim Lefanecha? It's not a Yom HaDin, it's a lie. How can we say that? And Rav Dessler gives a very Kedarkei B'Kodesh, a very profound explanation of what the second day of Rosh Hashanah is all about. He quotes the Zohar. The Zohar says that there are 2 days of Mishpat of Klal Yisrael. There are two kinds of Mishpat, two kinds of judgments. There's what the Zohar calls Dina Ilo'a, the Ikashya, there's a higher kind of judgment, which is severe. And there's a din tator, a lower kind of judgment, the ihu rafyo. That's a more lenient kind of judgment. And Rav Dessler explains it this way. There's a yesod in Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Luksato. He talks about hashgacha pratis and hashgacha klolis. There's hashgacha pratis, usually translated as divine providence, but that's a hashgacha on the individual. Hashgacha on the individual, meaning what? Meaning that sometimes you'll have a person who is so great, as we find in Tanakh. Moshe Rabbeinu hit the stone. So he hit the stone. Or the Rambam says, what was the chait? He was angry at Klal Yisrael. Didn't he have a right to be angry? And he hit the stone. The Rishonim explained, logically, he hit the stone. One of the Rishonim says, how do you talk to a stone? You hit it. That's how you talk to a stone. Some people you have to talk to that way also. But the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu is so hard to understand that there are several, as you know from learning the Chumash, almost every region has a different pshat in the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what's his einish? His einish is the thing that mattered to him more than anything else. He wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. And that privilege is denied him. For what? He didn't kill anybody. He didn't live with an Ashes Ish. He wasn't an Oved Avodah Zarah. What did he do? The rule is, as we all know, that great people are judged differently than ordinary people. An airline pilot with 400 passengers smokes marijuana, or a bicycle rider going down Amsterdam Avenue is smoking marijuana. This is against the law, and this is against the law, but obviously there's a big difference. You're 35,000 feet up in the air, and 400 people's lives depend on you, and you're high. That's a very serious offense. When you're dealing with a Moshe Rabbeinu, you're dealing with people of that stature, then every little thing is a big thing. You expect more from them. The Chafetz Chaim once gave Musa to one of his sons, and he told him that what he's doing is Chil Hashem. And the son said, his son told him, what am I? I'm not a big Rosh Yeshiva. I'm not a Gadol Hador. Nobody takes seriously what I do. It's not going to be a condemnation of all B'nai Torah. The Chafetz Chaim told him this. He said, you can sit and learn all day long, and people will ignore it. You make one mistake, and they're going to say all the yeshivalites are avaryonim. When you make a mistake, you represent something. You're a Ben Torah, you're part of the yeshiva. You make a mistake, everybody's going to look at your mistake and they're going to condemn not only you. I have a very, very good friend, he's not living anymore, a man of literally a billionaire. I don't mean that he has $10 million in the bank. I mean literally a billionaire. And we became friendly, he and his sons. I used to learn with them once a week. Reform Jews. This man probably never put on tefillin in his life. There was a time when the Reichman family was going through very, very severe financial setbacks. And they lost their whole empire. They lost billions of dollars worth of real estate in New York and in Canada. It was taken away from the banks, foreclosed on them. And he said to me, thank God, Paul Reichman is an honest man. Because every investigative reporter in the world is trying to find dirt on him. And if they would find anything dishonest or anything fraudulent, they blame it on all the Jews. They say all the Jews are crooks. But they won't find anything because Paul Reichman is an honest man. Rav Dessler explains the din of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. It's dina ilah. It's a higher form of judgment. The kind of judgment that Moshe Rabbeinu faced. And it's dina kashya. It's a severe kind of judgment. Because when you're at that level, there are no compromises. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects a lot and is not necessarily forgiving. Or it's very difficult to get him to be forgiving. That's the first day of Rosh Hashanah. The first day of Rosh Hashanah is a din on people whose life is a life of ruchnius. It's a life of panimius. And that's what Hashgacha Pratis is. On such people, every single deed counts. Every mitzvah is rewarded and every aveira is punished. It doesn't take too long. And as long as Klal Yisrael as a nation was in that level, then Rosh Hashanah could be one day. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was almost always one day. What was the second day? The second day is for people who are more superficial. It's Din Rafia. It's a more lenient kind of judgment because we're dealing with people who don't have that level of great spirituality. They're not on that level. And they're judged in a different way. That's not Hashgacha Pratis, it's Hashgacha Klolis. It's a general kind of judgment. What does that mean? What do we mean by general kind of judgment? And another thing, if these people are really not very worthy, then how can they survive the Din of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? How can they survive it? Why should they survive it? Now, the Rambam says, it's in Hagdama to Perish HaMishnayis. It's a very long Hagdama. It's about two-thirds, maybe three-quarters of the way through the Hagdama. The Rambam says that it's worthwhile for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have created the entire universe for the sake of one tzaddik. The Rambam says a building, a palace, could have been built because 50 years later or 100 years later, a tzaddik would be sweating under a burning sun and he'd get shade from that building. And for that alone, it was kedai for the building to be built. You know, somebody in Shanghai, a Jew in Shanghai, after World War I, built a magnificent shul. And there was no need for it. It was hardly ever used. The shul was built, and it was hardly ever used. Until World War II. Until the Mir Yeshiva was able to escape from Vilna and go across Russia and Siberia to Kobe, Japan, and finally be sent to Shanghai. That became the Beis Medrash of the Mir Yeshiva. So why was that building put up? The building was put up because that became an Ir Miklot for a great Makom Torah. The Rambam says that it's kedai for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have created the entire universe for the sake of one tzaddik. And Rav Dessler says, building on this principle, that's the second day of Rosh Hashanah. The second day of Rosh Hashanah, you're not big enough to be judged with Hashgacha Pratis on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. You don't deserve it, you haven't earned it. You haven't earned it. I mean the collective you, all of us. Most people haven't earned it. The Sforno says in Vayikra, I think it's in Parashat Shmini, if I remember correctly. The Sforno says that there's a small number of tzaddikim. There's Klal Yisrael, Am HaNifkor in the whole world, and it says in Klal Yisrael, there's only a very, very small number of tzaddikim. A tiny percentage of Klal Yisrael. How many B'nai Torah are there in the entire United States of America? You have several hundred here. You have maybe a couple of thousand in Lakewood. You have several hundred in Baltimore. Count them all up. Do you have 10,000? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's much fewer than 10,000. Can there be any doubt in our minds? I'm not talking about the minds of Federation leaders. Can there be any doubt in our minds that we are the Yisoid, we are the foundation of Klal Yisroel? And if we weren't here, if none of us were here, then the Ha'aretz Hoysa Vavayhu, it wouldn't be anything left. Second day of Rosh Hashanah is a judgment on people for what is their contribution to the Klal. Not just to the Klal. What is their contribution to these outstanding tzaddikim, Talmidei Chachamim, Chassidish Rebbeim, Litvish Gedolim, any of them, Sfaradish Chachamim? How much are they needed? How much are they needed by the people who are, the very small number of people who are zoicha to have their judgment exclusively on the first day of Rosh Hashanah? You wonder sometimes why certain institutions or why certain individuals, why did they survive the Yom HaDin? I remember when I was a bacher, we were lounging around in the dormitory, and there was a boy there from Seattle who was, his faith was very, very shaky. Came back from the summer in Seattle, and it was in September before Rosh Hashanah, and he says, I don't know. He says, I was home and I did this and I did that and I did the other thing and I ate something that you're not allowed to eat. I wasn't struck by lightning. So why wasn't he struck by lightning? Why wasn't he struck by lightning? There are people who not only are not struck by lightning, but they succeed and they prosper and they have good health because bigger people need them. Because bigger people need them. I once remember many, many years ago, I saw a letter of one college president wrote to a colleague, president of a different college, and he said, be nice to your C students. Your A students will come back to you on fellowships and as professors, but your C students will build you laboratories and dormitories. Be nice to your C students. The A students needed the C students. Without those C students, there wouldn't have been these laboratories and dormitories and who knows what else. That's the judgment of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. That's the Din HaTov, the lower level of judgment. That's the Din HaRafia. It's an easier level of judgment. And that's what Moshe Chaim Lutzato calls Hashgacha Klolis. It's a general judgment. It doesn't zero in as much on the individual. Of course, the individual, you're a chayta, you don't deserve to live. They're a cheshbonus. That's the prat and the klal. But if the klal needs you, then even if as a prat you don't deserve to have to be a din zakai on Rosh Hashanah, but if the klal needs you, then you'll survive and you'll be successful and you'll be blessed for the sake of the klal. That sferna, by the way, is in Parsha Sazria. The sferna says that those people who talking about Yom HaDin, those people who remain asleep, you know, the Rambam's Lashon, Uri Yishenim Mishnaschem, the Nirdomim Yitardei Maschem, the sferna says those people who remain Nirdomim, They remain asleep, they remain dozing off, they're impervious to the sound of the shofar, to the call for tshuva. The Sfarna says, those nirdamim who never become aroused, they, who are they? They're goyim and roiv, the majority of Klal Yisroel, except, he says, for yechidei segula. And people like that, he says, or remain under teva. They remain under the laws of nature. There's, Ramchal has a sefer called Das Tevunais. I think Das Tevunais is an essential hashkofa sefer in Klal Yisrael. Not a Musar sefer. Ramchal gives a general overview and intensive discussion of the purpose of the Bria, the purpose of creation, and how the Rabbeinu Shlomo judges things. And if you can, I would urge you to get hold of it. I hope it's not out of print. I hope it was reprinted. Get the one that has a parish from Reb Chaim Friedlander. Reb Chaim Friedlander was a great man. He was a successor of Rav Dessler in Ponevish. A great thinker. A man who was a Baal Tshuva. He studied philosophy in Germany, and he could rattle off anything. And he has a parish on Das Tevunes. Ramchal says that as long as the world was worthy, as long as Klal Yisrael was worthy, then the Rabbeinu Shel Olam exercised hashgacha that was apparent. It was obvious. And einish came quickly. A reward came quickly. And people with eyes and with sensitivity would understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actively supervising what's happening in the world. But then he says, but times changed. After the churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, the world fell. Klal Yisrael fell, and the world fell. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the method of hashgacha. No longer would there be hashgacha protis. From then on, there would be hashgacha klolis. And what does hashgacha klolis mean? Hashgacha klolis means that the world would be subject to the laws of nature, you'd have a tsunami, you'd have Hurricane Katrina, you'd have a Holocaust. The world was left to its natural means, the natural order of nature. Now that does not mean, he says, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just said, go, I'm chucking it, and then forget about it. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu still has his master plan for what his creation is supposed to become. Where his universe is supposed to go, leading up to the final tikkun to Yemei HaMashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what he's doing, and he knows what's happening. In a general way, not in an obvious way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still controlling events. The difference is this. The difference is that when there was Hashgacha Pratis, when people were worthy, then good people would not, as a general rule, there are always exceptions, but as a general rule, good people will not suffer for the averus of bad people. But when there's Hashgacha Klolis, and the world is left to the laws of nature, then it would happen. It could happen that good people could suffer because of the averus of bad people, or because the ocean temperature warmed up, and then all the rational explanations that they'll give for why Katrina happened and why there are more hurricanes lately than they used to be and why there was a tsunami. These rational explanations are correct. They are rational explanations. And these are natural events. But they're orchestrated in a hidden way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Anochi haster astir ponai mehem. I'll conceal my countenance. You won't see it anymore. We'll be landing in a couple of weeks. Klal Yisrael says, after a long litany of Einshin that Moshe Rabbeinu catalogs, the pasuk says that you'll say, Al ki ena lekai bekirbi mitzauni harois ho'ele. Because God is not within me. Klal Yisrael will say, because God is not within me, that's why these terrible things have happened to me. That's pretty good. That's tshuva, isn't it? That's tshuva. There's a recognition. It happens to me because ain't a lekai bekirbi. And then the pasuk goes on with more einshin. Why? What happened? Why wasn't tshuva effective? The Rebbe Rabbunim of Peshitska says, you know what the problem is? A Jew says, al ki ain't a lekai bekirbi? God is not within me? God has just discarded Klal Yisrael. That in itself is a terrible aveira. What do you mean, ein elokai bekirbi? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Bikirbi. He is with me. And if bad things are happening, I have to learn from those bad things that are happening. The Ponevich Rav, Zichron Levracha, had a very prominent yeshiva in Litza, and, you know, like all the Rosh Yeshiva in those years, in the 20s and the 30s, he had to go fundraising. And he had become, over the years, he had become very close to the Chofetz Chaim. You know why? This was, Ponevich Rav explained, he was not a Talmud of the Chofetz Chaim originally. What happened? What drew him close to the Chofetz Chaim? He once went to visit him. Such a great man, such a world-renowned tzaddik. He went to visit him. And he came into the Chofetz Chaim's bungalow, little house that he lived in, and he heard Chofetz Chaim was in a room with the door closed, crying bitter tears, crying and then saying psukim and tillim. And he asked him, well, what happened? What's going on? And they told him that there's a Jewish maid, a maid who's in labor, and it's a very difficult labor, and he's being mispowered for her. And the Ponevich Rav thought to himself, it wasn't his wife, it wasn't his daughter, it wasn't the Rosh Yeshiva's wife, it wasn't some prominent Rebbetzin. The Chofetz Chaim could carry on like that for a simple woman that he probably didn't even know. He says, I have to learn from this man. I have to learn from this man. And he became very attached to the Chofetz Chaim. Whenever he went on a trip overseas, he regularly went to South Africa. South Africa was populated, the Jewish community in South Africa was almost all Litvisher Jews. No Hasidim in South Africa. And these people, you know, in South Africa, they drifted away, but they had the Litvisher Derech Eretz for a Talmud Chacham. I have a friend, South African, a Baal Tshuva. He told me that his grandmother said that if she had known that she would have a grandson who would learn and send his children to yeshiva, she would not have sold the shas. She didn't need the shas. Her husband didn't need the shas. Her son didn't need the shas. South Africa had derech eretz for a Talmud Chacham. And Ponevich Rav, when he used to, before he went to South Africa, he would visit the Chofetz Chaim, and on the way back, he would visit him again. And the Chofetz Chaim once asked him, said he heard that the blacks in South Africa have a very difficult life. They're persecuted. Tell me, what is it true? And the Ponevich Rav said, Rebbe, why are you interested in the blacks in South Africa? What connection do you have with the blacks in South Africa? The Chofetz Chaim became annoyed with him. He said, if there's an earthquake in Japan, or a famine in India, or blacks in Africa are suffering poverty and disease, it's a message to Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know that such things can happen. And if they happen, if they have not happened to us yet, we have to learn from it. It has to affect us. We have to care. We have to be concerned. We have to take it as a message from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. This is the din of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know that there's a world out there, and we're part of it, and we have to contribute to the work. We have to make the world a better place. I'm not talking about the Tikkun Olam of Madonna and what's his name, Lerner of Tikkun magazine. I mean, real, legitimate Tikkun Olam, Masachin Olam, B'Malchus Shakai. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us. The second day of Rosh Hashanah, we're not the Chofetz Chaim. We're not the Ponevich Rav. We're not the Chazon Ish. We're not Rav Soloveitchik. We're not any of these things. But we're part of it. We're part of Klal Yisrael, and we can contribute to Klal Yisrael. You can contribute to Klal Yisrael by caring about others. The people who were thrown out of Gush Katif, like so much rubbish, are suffering today. They're suffering today. They've lost their livelihoods. They've lost their homes. They're living in two-bit hotels, and they'll be evicted. And the rent for those hotels is going to be deducted from that great big settlement that the government said they'll give, and they're not giving. These people are not receiving money from the government. Does it hurt us? It has to hurt us. It has to hurt us. And if it hurts us, and we want to help, we want to contribute. Stolner Rebbe, Siddush Rebbe in Yerushalayim, told me we're personally close, told me several months ago. Says he's not going into whether they should have settled in Gaza, they shouldn't have settled in Gaza, they belong to this party, they belong to that party. That's not important. That's not important. But there's a human tragedy here. And why aren't we concerned with the human tragedy? Why doesn't it hurt us? The first Mitzvah Shabbos after the expulsion from Gush Katif, not disengagement, the expulsion from Gush Katif, the Stolner Rebbe, after the Mlava Malka, said he wants volunteers. He had chartered a couple of buses, and he wanted volunteers to get on those buses and go to one of the places where there was a large concentration of the refugees from Gush Katif. Make them love a malka, be mesameach them. And they went, the buses were packed. And they went, and they sang, and they danced, and they hugged, and they loved. That could very well be our Yeshua on this second day of Rosh Hashanah, because the Klal needs us. Because Klal Yisrael needs us. The 12,000 Jews who had to leave New Orleans and that area because of Hurricane Katrina, they need help. The organizations that have started campaigns, I think not enough. I think there's not enough interest. That's the din of the second day of Rosh Hashanah. The Sfas Emes brings a medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu tikkun tefilas hazon. Moshe Rabbeinu was misak in the first bracha of Birchas Hamazon. Hazon es v'olam, baruch ato Hashem, hazon es hakol. Moshe Rabbeinu composed that one. The second bracha was composed by the boy Ha'aretz. Yeshua and Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, they composed the bracha al Ha'aretz, the al Hamazon. And the Medrash on the Pasuk, the Chalta V'Savato V'Erachta, the Medrash asks, but which bracha is more choshuv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Medrash says, V'ein locha chovit mikulam yaser mi birchas al ha'aretz v'al ha'mozein. The bracha that's most precious to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is al ha'aretz v'al ha'mozein. And why, the Medrash says, because it's a bracha for Eretz Yisrael. Al ha'aretz ha'toiva. It's a bracha for Eretz Yisrael. That bracha is more choshuv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Sfas Emes explains. Sfas Emes explains, there's Kedusha in everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shemayim v'Oretz. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the Shemayim, which has the holiness of Shemayim, Kisei HaKavod, Malachi HaShoreis, He created it, so it's holy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the earth also, so the earth has to be holy. But the earth is not holy. The earth is not holy. It's our job to make it holy. It's our job to bring Kedusha into the world. Same as what the Kotzke Rebbe said. Anshei Kodesh Tihi Yun Li. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I don't need you to make the heavens holy. Kisei HaKavod makes it holy. Malachim makes it holy. Tzrafim V'Yefanim make it holy. I don't need you. I don't need human beings to make the heavens holy. They're holy. Amshei Kodesh Tehiyun Li, I need you to make the earth holy. Amshei Kodesh Tehiyun Li said in Yiddish, Yisrael Tzayim, Menschlich Heilig. Be holy as human beings. And the Sasema says, that's why the bracha of Al-Horos V'Al-Mozen is so important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know why? Because Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael. And who was in Eretz Yisrael? The Knanim, Tayeva, Zima, Avodah Zarah. And Klal Yisrael brought Kedusha into Eretz Yisrael. Of course the receptacle was there. Eretz Yisrael has an innate integral Kedusha. But the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael primarily is because people, Jews, live there and bring holiness into Eretz Yisrael. And if Jews defile Eretz Yisrael, the Torah tells us in more than one place, we could be expelled. And Gedolei Yisrael have said, Rav Moshe Shapiro, one of the prominent Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing us, he's taking away part of Eretz Yisrael from us. Sharon is the keli, you know, it's like somebody shoots a gun. The gun killed somebody. The person killed somebody. Sharon expelled them. The Rabbeinu Shloilem took away part of Eretz Yisrael from us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is showing us it can happen. It can happen. Did those people deserve it to happen to them? Presumably not. But that's Hashgacha Klolis. That's Hashgacha Klolis. It's not Hashgacha Protis. That's Hashgacha Klolis. There are military Cheshbonos or economic Cheshbonos, peacekeeping Cheshbonos, keep America happy. You know, this Reform Jew, this friend of mine that I told you about before with Paul Reichman, that's over 20 years ago, Mayor Teddy Kollek, Mayor of Yerushalayim, gave land on Har HaTzofim to the Mormon Church to build a school and a church on Har HaTzofim, overlooking the Har HaBayis. And there was an uproar, and the Frumah complained, and the Chavri HaKnesset, the Frumah Chavri HaKnesset complained. Didn't help at all. And I was with this gentleman, this friend of mine, and his sons, and we were talking about it. And I said, it's a desecration. It's a terrible thing. Where's our self-respect? How do you give away a place like that to the Mormon Church? And he said, look, this is when Reagan was president. Orrin Hatch of Utah, very close to the president, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, very prominent Republican, good friend of the president, he's a Mormon. He says, Israel gets $3 billion from the United States. We can't antagonize the Mormon Church. Israel needs that money. Israel needs the money. So you have all kinds of cheshbonos, Gush Katif, it's indefensible, you're tying down the army, and Condoleezza Rice will be angry if we stay there, and President Bush will not be as good a friend if we stay there, and the peace process, and the European Union, and what will the Russians say, what will this one say, what will everybody say? We got to do it. That's the tool. The cause. We have to look for the cause within ourselves. That's what a Jew has to do. A Jew has to find causes within himself. The Sfasema says it's our job, it's the job of Klal Yisroel to bring Kedusha into Eretz Yisroel. The Igle Tal says in the Hagdamah, you know what Eretz Yisroel is. If your heart is in Eretz Yisroel, if your heart is with Kedusha, that's Eretz Yisroel. Wherever you are is Eretz Yisroel. Wherever you are can be Eretz. This Beis Medrash is Eretz Yisroel. And there's Kedusha here, because there's Torah here. Because there's Yerushalayim here, because they're striving here. And that's why Al-Horos V'Al-Hamozayin is the most beloved bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let me close with a title. I understand that you're wondering, how does Asher get in here? Ritzodek HaKoyen and Rasisei Laila, things of Pasuk, in Shofaros of Rosh Hashanah, V'hoyah b'yayim hahu, Yitaka b'shofar gadol, on that day, on the day when Mashiach is being heralded, you talk of a shofar gadol, the great shofar will be sounded. Uvo ha'avdim be'eretz Ashur, those who are lost in Eretz Ashur, Syria, will come. V'hanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim, and those who were pushed off in Mitzrayim, they'll come too. V'shtachlo l'Hashem b'har ha'kodesh b'Yerushalayim. And Rav Tzadik says, look at the words. Which is worse, Oivdim or Nidachim? Oived or Nidach? And Rav Tzadik says, an Oived is worse. Oived means he's lost. He's gone. He's completely gone. Nidach means pushed away. Somebody leaves the yeshiva. Somebody decides, I'm not interested. I don't want Torah. I don't need this Yiddishkeit with mitzvahs. He chucks it. He's lost. He's gone. And then you have somebody else who gets on the wrong side of the Hanhola, the Rosh HaYeshiva, and they distance him. Which is worse? The one who's gone. Because the other one, he's not in good graces, they don't smile at him anymore, but he still exists. But who's coming first? The Shofar Gadol sounds. The summons sounds. Mashiach is here. The Tikkun has come. Who's coming first? Oivdim be'eretz Asher, why are they coming first? They're the ones who are gone. They're lost. And the Tzaddik says, there's a basic difference between Eretz Asher and Eretz Mitzrayim. Eretz Mitzrayim is a fertile land. And the Nile overflows. Nothing to do. The land has natural irrigation. You can dig some ditches and the water goes further. It's easy. You know, cosmetics were invented in Mitzrayim. The men wore the cosmetics because they had nothing to do. It was an easy life. That was the real big easy. Talk about New Orleans. Mitzrayim was the big easy. And it had all of the hashkasa too. And Rav Tzadik says, Mitzrayim is called Ervas Ha'aretz. Why Ervas Ha'aretz? There was Nus in Mitzrayim. Oh, is it a promiscuous place, ancient Egypt? But it's called Ervas Ha'aretz because Odom La'omol Yulot. A person has to work, a person has to strive, a person has to create things. And Mitzrayim, there's nothing to do, they don't have to work. So it's Ervas Ha'aretz. It's the shame, it's the disgrace of the earth. Because that's not what people were created for. Ashur is a very infertile land. It's mountainous, it's hilly, it's rocky terrain. If you want to plant, if you want to grow things there, you have to pull out the rocks, you have to level the ground, you have to work hard. And Rav Tzadik says that this pasuk is a melitza for people striving in ruchnius. Eretz Ashur represents their oivdim, their loss to Yiddishkeit. But these are people who are looking, they're trying to find the truth. They're trying to find the truth. And in our own time, in the last generation or two, make love, not war, communism will save the world, better red than dead, all sorts of isms and philosophies, and now Kabbalah is the in thing. Madonna has become a Kabbalist, her name is Esther, and she wears a red bendler on her wrist. People are looking, there are people who are looking. And they're not finding, but they're looking. The metaphor of Mitzrayim is people who aren't looking at all. It's Ervas Ha'aretz. They're not looking. They want the easy way out. Everything has to be the easy way. When the Shofar Gadol sounds, it's the Oivdim be'eretz Ashur. When they hear that Shofar, they'll hear the truth. They'll sense the truth. And they'll come running. A long time before the Nidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. If I say, I'm a balabos, and you're b'nei Torah, you hear it, you live with it. You live with it. You're in the Beis Medrash day and night. Even though afternoons are devoted to other things. But you're in the Beis Medrash day and night. It's a big, big, big thing. You and it's my privilege to be attached to something like this, are the ones who sound the shofar. Yitokah b'shofar godel, the tzaddik says godel means an accumulation of a lot of smaller shofars throughout the years. Small shofars, small sounds, kodmo medaka over the years, and all of them accumulate to create a shofar godel. We are creating the shofar godel. And the time will come. May it be now. May it be now, and if not now, then very soon. When others will hear it because we're sounding it loud enough, because we've accumulated enough. Uvohu oivdim the Eretz Asher v'hanidochim, the Eretz Mitzrayim. Ksivu v'chsimetov.
I don't know how to do this.